The performance of contracts and appropriation of payments. To give you just a glimpse of this chapter, it says performance is of two kinds. It could be both parties fulfilling their respective promises, whereby here this is one wherein here both the parties are ready and have already fulfilled their respective obligations. The other one is an attempted performance, which we call as tender, which wherein the offerer is wanting to perform, but the offeree or the promisee is not receptive and therefore doesn't want the offerer to perform, which is called as the tender of performance. Appropriation of payments, it means to distribute or apply wherein the debtor has a sum of money to be paid unto the creditor. How does he have it distributed is the chapter, which is called appropriation of payments. We now move to performance of contracts and appropriation of payments. Who must perform? The parties to a contract must either perform or offer to perform their respective promises, unless such a performance is dispensed with or excused under the provisions of this Act or any other law. This means both the parties, if you have undertaken to perform your respective obligations, A is required to deliver goods and B is required to pay the money. Once both of you have agreed, you are required to execute the contract wherein A, you have to deliver the goods unless B says, no, I don't want the delivery. So this is what the provision says, unless the performance is sought to be excused under this Act or under any other law. Now, who is required to perform? Normally, we only have the promisor who is always required to execute the Act. Here, representative's liability. The promises bind the representatives of the promisor in case of the death of the promisor. Wherein, supposing the promisor A has told B, I wish to undertake a delivery of goods, and A dies before the performance is executed. Who is going to be responsible? The legal representatives, that is, the children of the deceased person will be liable as far as they inherit the estate of Mr. A, whatever is the property out of the same, they are required to execute the contract, and this is what it means. So therefore, the representatives of the promisors, in case of the death of such promisors before performance, unless a contrary intention appears from the contract. The essentials of a valid tender of performance. A tender of performance means one party wishes to offer or puts forth a proposal, whereas the other party is not ready to accept the same and therefore refuses or rejects the performance. And this is called as an attempted tender or performance, wherein the offerer obviously stands discharged from his liability and is excused as far as non-performance is concerned. However, these are subject to certain rules, which are as follows. Number one, it must be unconditional. It should be made by the promisor or his representative. It must be made at a proper or reasonable time and place. It must be made under such circumstances that the person to whom it is made must have a reasonable opportunity of ascertaining that the person by whom it is made is able and willing to fulfill the whole of that he is bound by the promise to do. Well, friends, let me put this in brief. The rule is as follows. The offerer here, when he is attempting a performance, shall not put any conditions. That is, it is unconditional. A tells B, I wish to sell you my cotton bales provided, Mr. B, you sell your machine unto me. Now, this is a conditional clause wherein it violates the terms of the contract. So, any kind of conditions shall not be put forth as far as the performance is concerned. It shall be made by the promisor or his representative or his agent. It must be made at a proper or reasonable time and place. Now, whatever is the time specified, that is business hours, or at the place which has been fixed in the contract, is a stipulation which has to be adhered by the offerer unto the offeree. It shall be made under circumstances that the person to whom it is made must have a reasonable opportunity. The rule says, Mr. A, when you are delivering goods unto B, please allow B a reasonable time to examine the goods so as to see whether whatever you have sent as per the sample and whatever has been received by him are the same. We have a shining example of startup versus McDonald. Here is a case whereby X was told to deliver goods unto Y. But Y had made it very clear, it shall be during business hours on the day that I have laid down. Now, Mr. X did have the delivery given, but instead of the business hours, he was a little late. It was before midnight. Now, Mr. Promise, he said, no, I shall not accept. Now, is this a valid tender or an invalid tender? It is perfectly a valid tender because it was executed on the same day, only that it was a little after business hours. But as long as it was executed on the same day it was held, there was an opportunity for the promisee to examine the goods, which he ought to have done, and therefore it was regarded as a valid tender. Again, the offer to perform shall be the whole of the transaction. What does this whole mean? The promisee says, I want the full payment. The offerer says, I'll make only part payment. No, this is not done. Wherein the terms of the contract are clear that it is the entire transaction in its whole or completeness which has to be complied. Here, if the offerer puts in his own part payment as a conditional clause, here it is deemed to be an invalid tender. If the offer is the offer to deliver anything to the promisee must have a reasonable opportunity of seeing that the thing offered is the thing which a promisor is bound by his promise to deliver. In case of joint promises, an offer to any one of the several joint promisors has the same legal consequences as an offer to all of them. A, B, C are three joint promisors. So therefore, in the case that one of them is giving an offer to any one of the several joint promisees also, here one of the promisees is entitled wherein it is a valid promise. It must be made to the promisee or is duly authorized agent. When it is made to the promisee, it must be only to him or any agent as authorized by the promisee. When can a party rightly rescind or terminate the contract and claim damages or compensation for damages? When a party to a contract has refused to perform his promise. Here, there is a singer who has promised to perform in an auditorium for a period of 1 week. Just before the 7th day, on the 6th day, he refuses to perform. Here, the contract is rescinded by the manager of the auditorium, who is entitled to claim compensation for the night that he does not perform. When a party to a contract prevents the other party from performing his promise. When a party to a contract fails to perform his promise at or before the time that is mentioned. When the contract is voidable on account of coercion, undue influence, fraud or misrepresentation. Well, friends, I think we have already mentioned what is coercion. It is a physical threat by one person to another. Undue influence is an influence of a moral pressure by the dominating man over a weaker person. It could be the case of a false statement which is done deliberately with an intention to cheat or deceive the other person, while misrepresentation is a false statement which is unknowingly done without an intention to deceive. And finally, when an agreement is discovered to be void from the very beginning, the agreement cannot be enforced. Performance of reciprocal promises. What exactly is reciprocal? Under Section 2F of the Contract Act, promises which form the consideration or part of the consideration for each other are called reciprocal promises. A tells B, I shall sell you 50 bales provided you provide a security unto me. So this is mutual and reciprocal, whereby A's goods along with B's security are the promises which are mutually agreed upon. On the basis of this, we now proceed with rules regarding reciprocal promises under sections 51 to 54 and 57. Rule 1. To be simultaneously performed. When a contract consists of reciprocal promises to be simultaneously performed, no promisor needs to perform his promise unless the promisee is ready and willing to perform his reciprocal promise. A tells B, I shall deliver this goods to you provided you pay the first installment. It has already been decided that the payment shall be by way of part payment or installment. So the question here is simultaneous performance. A tells B, I shall deliver part of the goods provided you give me the payment on the first installment. And if you are ready and willing, am I in a position to execute the contract? Rule 2. The order in which reciprocal promises are to be performed. When the promises are to be performed at a certain point of time, is it that the promisor should first perform or the promisee? Now, this will be normally fixed in the contract or will depend on the circumstances of the case. Friends, let me give you an example. P tells Q, I shall construct a house for you. After I construct the building, B is required to make the payment. Now, as per the order of performance, B will not pay unless A constructs the house. So here is the order in which the promisor says, let me have the task done. After I am done or I am in a position to be accomplishing the task, I shall demand the payment from you. In case of dependent promises, where one cannot be performed till the other is performed. Now here is a case wherein the builder tells the supplier or the opposite party, I am to construct a house. The opposite party says, you will not construct the house until I supply the cement, the timber, the sand or other materials. Now, if the materials are not supplied, the promisor cannot execute the task until the promisee is in a position to supply the articles. So these are dependent promises where one cannot be performed till the other has already performed. To give you another very, very simple example. The master of a house has got certain debris. He's telling his servant, please see that it is cleared for me. The servant tells the master, sir, why don't you get a cart or a bucket so that I'm in a position to clear your debris? So if the master is not able to provide the cart or the bucket as the case may be, the servant does not clean the debris. It's as simple an example as the master and the servant. Effects where a party prevents performance of the contract, it becomes voidable at the option of the party so prevented. To do certain things legal and also other things which are illegal. The first set of promises is a contract, while the second is a void agreement. Here are two parties, A and B, wherein A tells B, I'll sell the house to you if you're going to stay. In the second transaction, A tells B, you will pay me a sum of rupees 50,000 as rent, provided it is used as a gambling den or for prostitution. Well, friends, you are aware that the second type of agreement is one which is illegal and therefore void, cannot be executed, whereas the first one is legal. So we have to see whether these two agreements can be split out into legal and illegal, so that that which is legal can be executed, that which is illegal cannot be enforced, being void ab initio. Performance of alternative promises. If one branch is legal and the other is illegal, we have already seen the legal branch alone can be enforced. Devolution of joint liabilities. Rule 1, jointly liable. First and foremost, I will just explain what exactly is devolution about. Devolve, to hand over or transfer to another person. So this is a case whereby the promisor would hand over his liability to another person. And this becomes a liability wherein all the promisors are jointly liable, so that this liability becomes joint and several vis-a-vis the third party. So rule 1 states joint liability. A, B and C owe a sum of money to Mr. D, the third party. Now D is the creditor. D has a right to file a case against all three of them separately, or he may ask A, please contribute the entire sum at your end so that you are having a liability wherein you are responsible for all the promisors. So this is called joint liability. Promisee's right. Now here the promisee, you can see, has a right to either have it enforced against any promisor individually, or he can ask one of them to contribute the amount in his singular capacity. Equal contribution. Now supposing one person, Mr. A in my example, has paid the entire money of 3,000 rupees. Wherein, in my transaction, you have seen, it was A, B and C owing a sum of 3,000 to D. Here, A has already paid the 3,000. How does he recover? He will recover 1,500 from B and C, which is called equal contribution. Default in contribution. A, B and C are the three people who owe 3,000 unto D. A is insolvent, unable to pay. Mr. B, in such an eventuality, you will take up this liability and therefore pay the amount of 3,000, so that you, Mr. B and C together will be contributing 1,500 in the event of A being insolvent, wherein there is a default at his end that he is unable to pay. a release of the joint promisor in case A stands released from his liability. Of course, the release of one of the joint promisors by the promisee does not operate as the release of others in India. So that, as I've already told you, if A is discharged from his liability, D can always file a suit against B and C and state you are liable to pay the entire sum. And therefore, later on, Mr. B and C, you can recover the amount from Mr. A. Appropriation of payments. As I've mentioned earlier, it means to distribute or apply the money which is due by a debtor unto the creditor. So, when there are several distinct debts which are due and the debtor is having insufficient funds, he makes a payment, but in what area are these to be appropriated or applied by the creditor is known as appropriation. The three fundamental rules under the same are: appropriation means an application of payment, wherein the rule states where payment of the debt to be discharged is indicated, section 59. Where payment of the debt to be discharged is not indicated, section 60. Where the debtor does not intimate and the creditor fails to appropriate. Well, friends, section 59, the rule states that debtor clearly intimates to the creditor, "Sir, the amount that I am now paying you will be discharged towards a particular debt." Now, in Croft versus Lumley, Lord Campbell very clearly indicated, "Mr. Creditor, you have to know when a money is already paid by the debtor, it is always at the discretion of the payer and not the receiver, which will be an important fundamental rule." So here is a case where A owes B a debt of rupees 1000 as on 1st June unto Mr. B. A makes a prompt payment as on 1st June and tells B about the same. Now here, this is the debt as on 1st June which has to be discharged or extinguished, because this is an indication made by the debtor unto the creditor. This is rule 59 for you. Rule 60. If the debtor does not intimate, it is now at the discretion of the creditor who will apply the payment towards any lawful debt at his discretion. But here again, the creditor is required to see, as far as any payment is concerned, and there is a part payment, is it required to be distributed towards the principal amount or towards the interest? The fundamental rule states it is first to be appropriated or applied towards the interest and then towards the principal. This is rule number 2 under section 60. And finally, we come down to rule 61, which says neither the debtor nor the creditor is in a position to decide how to go about with the appropriation. Here, we go by what is called as the famous Clayton's rule, which states any kind of appropriation will be made in the chronological order or as per time, in that whenever a debt is due, it shall be first extinguished, so that any kind of receipts as well as payments, the payment or the debit side will first be cleared against the credit side, so that there is a balance on the payment, wherein in case there are two amounts outstanding on a particular point of time, you will have it proportionately extinguished, so that the debit amount is sought to be extinguished accordingly as per the credit side whenever any amount is received, so that the debts are cleared according to the chronological order, which is the rule in Clayton, which has been laid down under Section 61. To summarize the appropriation of payments, the debtor has the first right to intimate the appropriation of the debt at the time of the payment. Secondly, if he fails to exercise his right, this right then devolves, which means it goes on unto the creditor. And if the creditor also fails to exercise his right, this appropriation will be done in order of time. In case of debts of equal standing, which I just mentioned, each will be appropriated proportionately so that they are sought to be paid in the proportionate area. Thank you very much, my friends. I think we have done fairly a good analysis on the subject matter, wherein we have seen the rule regarding performance of contracts, reciprocal promises, wherein two people perform their promises mutually, and finally, we have seen that here is an area as far as appropriation of payments are concerned under the Clayton's rule of 59, 60 and 61. Thank you very much.